All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we will be joined by John Martin. In fact, in 30 minutes, analyst for the Field of 68, sports talk host out in Memphis for one of the ESPN stations there. Does a great job covering college hoops. We'll get his thoughts on the chances of Missouri or Kansas improving their seeding with wins, or what happens if they both lose today, as both KU and MU are in action. Of course, SEC tournament debut for this season for the Missouri Tigers, as they had a bye there, and the way the tournament set up, they will play Mississippi State a little bit later on tonight. And then, of course, Kansas, after a late night last night in overtime against UCF, they're going to take on Arizona later on today. So we'll talk about that also from a national perspective with John Martin. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We'll get the video stream up running as well on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, X. I think all of them are covered there. And make sure to subscribe on YouTube. And that way it makes it a lot easier for you to catch our show, Vesco and Dusty, and The Drive as well. But man, 80 degrees today.
What are you going to do? Do something outside?
I mean, nothing.
You slammed the table. You seemed really excited about it.
I am excited about it, man.
I think, I like warm weather as much as anybody. Good. Will you just like sit outside? Will you do anything in particular outside?
It could be an afternoon of going to a quick little patio spot. I don't know. We'll see. Every time I see the aerial shots of Power and Light,
you keep
this
thinking
week,
about going down
yeah,
there
because
huh?
it looks great. It looks like perfection. And the Big 12 tournament has to be thrilled with the results of yesterday. The only way it would have been better for them is if K-State would have won, because Iowa State's still around. They're going to play in the morning session here at 11:30. We'll have updates on that throughout the show, and then Kansas will play on the late game tonight. They almost got KU, K-State, and Iowa State all still around on Thursday. That's the only way this tournament can be going better from a city and Big 12 perspective. The weather's cooperated. The right teams, if you will, are still around from a fan base perspective. So it's been great. And let's start with K-State, because last night, that is what they looked like a majority of the season. They were coming off a nice win against Arizona State. Coleman Hawkins was awesome. And then last night, that performance against Baylor, where they lost 70-56 and were really not in that game outside of the first minute or two, that was who K-State was this year.
When I watched them, that felt like not a team that quit, because obviously they kind of clawed back in a little bit closer than maybe it was in the early portion of the game, et cetera, right? So maybe a tiny bit of fight or a little bit of fight to go with it. But genuinely, it just is a team that lacks enough talent to be a serious threat. And what happened last night was they got on the floor, they got behind the eight ball a little bit against a team that's not way better than them. Like on paper over the course of the year, a little bit better than them, but not like way better than them over the course of the entire year, Gold. And they got run out of the gym. And look, I didn't need to know anything else. If I had not watched a single second of the game and you had just told me that Coleman Hawkins didn't get his first bucket till the second half, okay. I could have told you Kansas State was going to lose. That's not like a mystery or any other part of it. It's that afterwards, it's like Tang was just like, well, we know some changes, but we like ourselves too. And it just felt like a team that fell apart at the beginning of the year, had one five-game stretch that convinced us they were a competitive basketball team, and then was just kind of bad the rest of the way. I think in retrospect, it was a mirage, a total mirage, that stretch of games in which
five
they
games.
Looked good against really good opponents. And what they were last night, one of the worst teams in the Big 12 this year, that's pretty much what they were this year. Bottom third of the Big 12 teams, so can lose to anyone on any night, shot really poorly. Coleman Hawkins had a bad game, and that was kind of it.
And he spoke after. Drew, you were at the game last night as well in the evening session.
Very emotional, yeah.
And we all know like this, the story of him getting the money through NIL, right? One of the highest, if not the highest paid NIL players this past year in college basketball, and never got going right. And then, you know, there'd be some flashes, and he was heavily criticized in this new era of NIL where players are being compensated the way they are and the dollar figures are so public, you're going to be criticized more. And this was Coleman Hawkins, very emotional after the loss.
I really wanted to come in and impact the program and, you know, some of the stuff, the outcome. Obviously, it wasn't what we wanted. And I feel like I let a lot of people down. And I feel like I did a poor job of letting people talk about me and affect my play. And it was evident all year. And I wish I could just go back block out everything, for not for myself, but for the team, so we could have had a more successful year.
So that was Coleman Hawkins. Obviously, feel bad for the kid. He did not have the season anybody expected him to have, and he admitted there, and there was more. There's a longer cut as well, where you know he says the NIL backlash from making $2 million. And I understand some of you are going to say, oh, he made $2 million. Who cares? He's, you know, we're still talking about it. You know, we're still talking about a person and emotions, yeah. And it still impacts you no matter how much
and
money you're making.
Showing yeah. an honest
you know, like, you yes, know? He made $2 million. Doesn't mean things don't affect you still. But this is the reality of, and I, not a lesson, but a reminder of the impact that the new NIL world is created, where we know what these kids are making. And so they're judged differently. You know, I'm not saying people should cross the line of taking personal shots, but in terms of your play, people are going to be more critical of what, because what you're getting paid out of it. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the reported dollar amount, you know, was what, $2 million mm-hmm. when he transferred in from Illinois. And, you know, they received votes in the preseason AP poll. K-State did way back when after they got Hawkins, you know, and he ended up averaging 10 points, six, almost seven boards, four assists this year for them. And he was inconsistent, you know, and then yesterday, of course, was just not a very good day at the office, to say the least, for him.
And that happens. I'm not trying to take it as like a personal thing. Yeah. He's like, he can't have that kind of game in Kansas State win, which is what happened. But yeah, I do feel for the kid. He obviously meant a lot to him to go to K-State, and he was emotional about the fact he felt like he let down the program, because he did get paid a lot of money to come in here and make this program better. And they weren't a good team.
Yeah, that's
they
the reality.
They finished below 500. They've already admitted they're not going to play in a single postseason tournament. Wouldn't matter if they got an invite to the CBE or the NIT. They weren't showing up. They're not going to go to any of those right now. They're just going to shut it down and try to like reset kind of where they are. And then there's the bigger picture stuff of like, you know, Jerome Tang, and where's your confidence level right now in the program. But I don't know. You're always like one good portal year away from, you know, like, you know, it was like one good portal year away from being
no
good
doubt
again.
No question, and we know he's done it before. I think the interesting thing to follow in the offseason will be what kind of money is he allowed for NIL. What I mean by that is he convinced them to make $2 million happen for a player, and it obviously backfired. Does he have the same resources this next year in the portal? I don't know the answer to that. My assumption is no, but I don't know the answer. Folks in Manhattan may have more insight on that, obviously. But that what he was describing, those emotions are what a lot of players are going to feel more and more if they don't perform after everybody knows you got paid the same way at a professional level. And that's where we're at now in collegiate sports, is some of these guys being compensated as professionals. And if they don't perform, as long as you don't cross the line, they're going to be criticized. And how do you balance that? It's so easy for us to say, well, stay off social media, because he admitted, like, hey, the social media stuff got to him, because he was getting crushed throughout much of the season. It's so easy. Like, we'll just stay off of social media, because that would be the easiest thing, right? Like, on the surface, you're like, dude, just stay off of social media. Way too easier said than done. And then also with these NIL deals, some of them, hey, you're asked to promote things through your social media following. So it's very difficult, but this is what is going to happen more and more. I'm not saying that that people are not going to live up to the hype, but he will not be the only situation next year or years down the road where someone gets paid a lot of money and doesn't have a good season.
The biggest concern is that Jerome Tang's team has gotten worse every single year. First year as a coach, made the NCAA tournament, you know, won a game there, then won 19 games last year and missed, now won 16 games this year and missed. His team has gotten worse all 3 years he's been the head coach of Kansas. They started off pretty hot, and now his teams have regressed back to, like, middling over the last 2 years, so they're going to have to see.
He leveraged Arkansas last year for a new contract, and if it wasn't for that massive buyout, maybe we are having a different conversation about the future, but he's not going anywhere now because of the buyout. Next year, depending on what they do, that's a different conversation. But right now, Jerome Tang will be the head coach next year in Manhattan for the Kansas State Wildcats based off of the buyout amount.
I do think, too, with the Coleman Hawkins thing, it was obviously tough to see him have that reaction, but it was nice to see somebody who really took it upon themselves to try and make the team better. And knowing in a situation where you're heartbroken, your season's done, and you didn't complete that goal, you're showing your emotion to this level and not along the lines of, well, I'm getting paid $2 million, so I'm good. You know, it's something that college sports tend to bring out, especially around this time of year with March Madness. But it was nice to see where he had even said, and we didn't include the soundbite in there, I'd cut it out, but he was like, I've experienced what nobody in that room had really experienced before. in their careers, and I wanted to give that to them. So along with the money and everything, he felt the responsibility of, I've been to an Elite Eight. I want to be able to be a part of the reason why these guys get to see something like that. And obviously it didn't happen, but it was a respectable moment, I think, from a lot of people regarding Coleman Hawkins in that last night. Yeah.
Then you were at T-Mobile Center pretty late last night because we had an overtime game in the late session, Kansas against UCF last night. A very entertaining game, kind of crazy game. Had just about everything in it. Ended up being 98-94 win for Kansas. They're going to play Arizona tonight in the late game again, 8:30 at the Big 12 tournament inside T-Mobile Center tonight. And that game, much like what you just said with K-State, that game last night was also another very perfect encapsulation of what the Kansas Jayhawks have been. There's flashes where you get excited. You're like, wow, it's all coming together. Hell, AJ Storr, your guy, Drew, had his best game in a Jayhawk uniform. You're like, oh, here we go, just in time for the tournament. Meanwhile, KJ Adams still can't catch a pass from Hunter Dickinson. DeJuan Harris, at times, they forget they have a guard. You know, Bill Self's even drawing up ISOs for KJ Adams late in the game, and he's stepping out of bounds. I mean, it's just the stuff we've seen all year. They can't close out games. It goes to overtime. They're very fortunate. I think the Johnson kid fouled out for UCF there before the overtime period. Look, to me, the win ensures they don't fall back to an eight seed on the seed line. To me, they've locked themselves in at least a seven. And then if they were to go on a little bit of a run, including tonight against Arizona, could they go higher than that? Yes. I think last night's win was important, that you didn't lose to an NIT team and put yourself maybe on the eight line. So they needed that one. Maybe there's something there with your guy, AJ Storr. I don't know. The perimeter defense is still disastrous.
They had, I don't know, five times I thought they had a chance to close out the game. When they were up like 10 with eight to go, that felt like a good chance to just like maybe keep them at arm's length. And then that lead got erased immediately. At the end of regulation, they had a two possession lead with like 90 seconds to go and couldn't close it out and let it get to overtime. And then it was still a sweat at the end of the overtime period when it didn't need to be. Yeah, and so
UCF got a good look there on that last possession that they had.
Everything about Kansas, like I'll say this, and I haven't watched like a million Kansas games this year, right? I haven't watched all 33 games or whatever they played this year. Does anyone else watch Kansas basketball? And it feels like their offensive identity is scrambling to pick up the ball that's on the ground. Like the entire offense at Kansas feels like, the ball, it's like fumbling and it's like made of butter. The entire team looks like they don't know how to handle the basketball. They try to pass inside and it goes through KJ Adams' hands. Hunter Dickinson's trying to look like Steph Curry out there half the time. Like it just, none of it looks fluid. And then they'll look fluid for like 4 minutes, and I'll be like, oh, that's what Kansas wants to do offensively. You know, the pick and roll from Hunter Dickinson, and they get him low, and then KJ from the wing, you're like, oh, this kind of makes sense. And then they just immediately fall apart and start like giving the ball away and making bad passes. And you're like, this doesn't make any sense. Kansas, just very unimpressed. They're way better than UFC, or they should be way better than UFC. They're probably not way better.
They're UCF.
Or UCF, sorry.
Yeah. I know you're good. We've all done that one before.
Yes. Well, yes. I'm not used to them in the conference yet. Correct. Than UCF, and you're just like, you watch them play, and it's like, yeah, you just let them hit endless threes on you.
Now, look, UCF, you know, when they played at the Allen Fieldhouse when it was a close game, UCF hit some threes there. I think they hit 14 at the Fieldhouse. They hit 14 again last
night. Keyshawn Hall, man.
That's part of their game. I just think KU's perimeter defense. I thought with DeJuan Harris did not play in the last game against UCF, I thought with him out there, their perimeter defense would be better, and it was not. It's why that even AJ Storr was great on offense, but you notice they tried to get Rylan Griffin in there a couple times because he's just a better perimeter defender, and there was some miscommunication. Drew, you saw it in person. I thought last night was just what Kansas has been for much of the season. It was good they won, though.
Yeah, and Bill Self, one of the first things he said in the opening presser is, look, defensively, that is not at all the game that we want to have, obviously, you know, for obvious reasons. Somebody did mention, I think, and this is a key point, amidst the poor defensive game, Keyshawn Hall down the stretch couldn't really do much, and I think KJ Adams deserves some credit for that.
He's also cramping.
Yeah, that as well, where his leg locked up, but KJ Adams being able to take it upon himself in a way to say, okay, this guy's killing us single-handedly right now. He's the best player on the floor. We need to stop him, and if we stop him, then we're good to go. And he was able to help make some plays down the stretch. But, yeah, that game was very exciting and very entertaining for somebody who has no skin in the game. I would say that's one of the best college basketball games
It was very entertaining.
Of the season in terms of entertainment.
Yeah. If you're looking for optimism moving forward, it's like, hey, offensively, I actually didn't think it would. I mean, not just because they scored 98 points, including overtime, but like offensively, that was actually one of their better offensive performances. It really was.
AJ Storr and Zeke Mayo are both playing really well because Zeke Mayo played great in the first half.
He did. Yeah. Finished with 24 points, led the team in scoring. But the biggest difference was out of nowhere, they got 19 points from AJ Storr. And we'll see tonight against Arizona, you know, late night, long game. Arizona's fresh. Kansas is a 1.5 point underdog tonight. We'll see, you know, if they can get through Arizona, they just beat them in a very
I'm
close game at Fieldhouse.
I'm less confident they're going to beat Arizona after watching them play against UCF.
Yeah, I'm trying to balance that because, like, this is where that's my first reaction, too. I think everybody's reaction after last night, like, oh, well, they're going to get killed tomorrow by Arizona. Basketball's weird. Betting is weird. Like, it's just, I don't have a good feel because I think, yes, the public's first reaction is, well, there's no way they're going to beat Arizona. They played late last night and then. But there's a reason why they're only a 1.5 underdog in this game. You know,
I think Kansas wins tonight.
Yeah, it would not surprise me. The last night might have prevented them from being able to go on a really deep run in the tournament just because now you're going to be putting even more games together. But I don't know. I mean, if I keep saying your guy because he's a Wisconsin guy.
That's right.
AJ Storr, if he's able to found some sort of confidence and trust at all this late from the coaching staff, that's something that could have an impact next week in the tournament. But we'll see. Like we've seen one game performances from a player or two before. You know, Coit had the one game where like, oh, here we go, and then he hasn't done anything since. Yeah. You know, AJ Storr was that last night. Sure, seems like an outlier. It is an outlier for the season.
It's an outlier for how things have gone, yes.
But is there a chance that
he can be a 10-12 point guy, a contributor?
I was joking with you guys in the text last night. Mm-hmm. I was like, AJ Remy Storr. Like, can all out of nowhere, can he pull a Remy Martin here and lead him through a tournament?
I mean, more than Coit, yes, because we saw last year he averaged 20 points a game. He's capable of being that player. It's just a matter of, I think for him, the way that he's been, his minutes have been so inconsistent at times that if he gets going. Like last night, he hit his first two shots, and he was asked afterwards, like, did it feel like you were going to have one of those games? And he's like, I mean, I hit my first couple of shots, and yeah, it felt good to it boosts up your confidence. Like Zeke sure. Mayo, to your point, Cody,
games of him is the most confident. The best thing for Kansas out of anything that's happened over the last 3 weeks is that Zeke Mayo doesn't look afraid to shoot a basketball anymore.
Totally.
We'll get back to some college basketball throughout the show. Our Big 12 scoreboard updates will kick off when we get the Iowa State game going, but our Big 12 tournament coverage on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. Let's go to the NFL a little bit. And, you know, the offseason, we always joke about everybody trying to make their case why this is the year somebody else is going to snap the AFC West streak the Chiefs are on. And the Chiefs are a couple years away from matching that AFC East streak that the New England Patriots had during their two dynasties over 20 years. And so it's not surprising that we'll see that. I guess I was surprised that on March 12th, we already were seeing people make their case for why the Chiefs will not win the AFC West this year. This came from Joe Fordenbaugh over on ESPN Radio. And look, if you want to say the Chiefs aren't going to win the division, I'm not even going to say you're like crazy. I'm surprised you're saying it this early when we don't even know what the rest of the AFC West has done yet or the Chiefs' final picture. It was more the reasoning that didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Problem is, they're not going to be able to solve all of their issues to get back to the Super Bowl next year. They're heading for, I'm not going to call it a reset, but I would not expect them in the Super Bowl next year. I don't expect them in the AFC Championship game next year. I'm going to be betting that they do not win the AFC West next year. Right now, it sounds crazy because of how dominant they've been. But at some point, the bottom is going to fall out on these guys. There are a few big red flag indicators. Number one, they have won 17 consecutive one-score games. They were 12-0 in one-score games last year. Last time we heard of a team that was that dominant in one-score games was the Minnesota Vikings a few seasons ago. Bottomed out the next year.
They went 13-3 right
there. You can't just bank on the idea that Denver's always going to have that game-winning field goal blocked, or that Cincinnati's always going to commit that penalty in the big spot, or that Isaiah Likely's toe's always going to come down out of bounds. It doesn't work like that. Eventually, the math catches up to you. You're going to start losing some one-score games. On top of that, I don't see Travis Kelce having some resurgence. He'll be good. He won't be great.
So that was Joe Fordenbaugh on ESPN Radio the other day. A couple things. look, are the Chiefs going to go 30-0 in one score games? No, of course not, right?
Like maybe
that, they're probably not going 30-0 in one score games. I understand that eventually that does come back to the pack.
Sure.
The problem is saying, well, because remember when the Vikings went 13-3 and then they sucked the next year? The Vikings haven't won a Super Bowl. They had Case Keenum going for them, not Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid that have won multiple rings that were just in the Super Bowl. I just don't get the comparison to the Minnesota Vikings
from why
that's going to happen again. If you wanted to say like the Chiefs aren't going to be in the Super Bowl next year, like, yeah, that's not a crazy take at all, right? It's very hard to get there. All these different things. Could the Chiefs take a slight step back win-wise? Absolutely, all in play. But you got to come up with a better reason for me to believe it, other than, hey, that team that has done nothing as a franchise and they didn't have the best quarterback in the league. Remember when they had a fluky year and then stunk?
They probably came back to earth because Case Keenum was their starting quarterback, not because they won a bunch of one-score games. Look, I'm not saying that one-score games isn't like, but this isn't to me like turnovers. A number that we have generally decided, like fumbles recovered, right? That is a stat that has a variable, right? You just, it's an oblong ball that bounces any number of ways. There are years in which you come back to the mean on that, and that's just life. Scores in one, like records in one score games typically indicate to me the level of team you are. Maybe it changes the following year because you don't have the same amount of talent, the same amount of grit, or any of the things that come with it, or just the ability to win in that way. 17 in a row, that's out of fluke territory. I'll say about that stat. If you say they've won 4 one-score games in a row, I'll hear you out. 17 in a row, we are out of fluke category. You are just better than most teams at winning one-score games. That's it. No other part about it. No other thing about it. Plus, Minnesota had that down year where they went 7-10 the following year and had to change quarterbacks and go through all this, they had to like refine themselves. That was a 13-3 year. In 2017, he's making this reference, by the way. And then the following year, they went to 8-7 in the first year of Kirk Cousins.
And even a couple years ago,
Mike Zimmer.
And even a couple years ago, when we all knew the Vikings were fluky and
13-4, yeah. We thought they were kind of fraudulent.
That was with Kirk Cousins, I think,
and O'Connell. So at least the same. And O'Connell,
but still, the same thing applies. Like you do have to consider the track record of who's in place and have they actually shown they're not fluky? As in, they followed up the season. The Chiefs. Or even if you want to say it's over now, but they've been a dynasty. So the idea that what they have done is something they have no way to back up. This is what people have been saying for like 2 years. Also, that's the other problem with the take is like 2 years ago, I could have played that cut 2 years ago. Other than the 17-0 one score stat, you could have said the same thing. I have no idea if they're going to the Super Bowl next year. It's very hard to do. Very difficult. Winning the division, I tend to think that barring a massive change of what I've seen from the other teams in this division this offseason so far, and what is an unfinished offseason, I haven't seen something that actually terrifies me to think that it's changing. Geno Smith doesn't cause me to really freak out. Sorry. The Broncos, what? I like the Evan Ingram signing for their tight end yesterday.
Another good signing by them.
The Broncos, are the Chiefs going to go 5-1 in the division next year like they did this year? I don't know. Maybe not. But, if the Chiefs are maybe fluky by winning 17 one-score games, why was Bo Nix rookie year not fluky? I don't think it is, by the way, but like, why wasn't that a fluky rookie year for Bo Nix? Maybe he got lucky. I don't know.
More
I can
often
do the same
not,
thing.
That's far more likely. I'll be honest. That's far more likely to be fluky than the Chiefs, who have been to 7 consecutive AFC title games. Because that's the other thing is, I don't think they'll be in the AFC title game. If you're saying that, you're just doing that for attention. No offense. Like, this is the year they finally don't get it. You're right. I've heard that 5 years in a row, 4 years in a row. I don't know how many times in a row I got to hear. They're not going to make the AFC title game. They're not going to make the Super Bowl. Well, they've made the AFC title game 7 years in a row or 8 years in a row, and they've made the Super Bowl 3 years in a row and 5 times in the last 6 years. You're actually going way against the odds to say that. And just because they won in one-score games, that's how they got to all those AFC championship games and Super Bowls. There's a number, even fluky numbers, that get so high that they're no longer fluky. I mean, like for Shohei, right? I'd be like, nobody can keep doing this. Well, no, some people are just against the normal grain of things.
A little bit of news in the NFL. I guess, the Steelers have found their quarterback,
Drew's guy.
According to Mike Garafolo, the Steelers have signed Mason Rudolph to a 2-year, $8 million
maybe
deal.
Maybe he'll start for Pittsburgh instead of Tennessee.
They did not have a quarterback signed. So they just, they got to make sure while they have Aaron Rodgers hold their soul in their hand for the next couple of weeks. But basically, the dream of yours to have Mason Rudolph start for the Tennessee Titans is over. It's over. It's Will Levis or Cam Ward, it looks like. It's one of those two, right?
Just,
it has to be, doesn't it, at this point?
I just don't think.
Russell Wilson's taking a visit to Cleveland, not Tennessee.
Is Aaron Rodgers potentially a Tennessee Titan? I think that's the outlier in this whole equation.
The only teams
that would mentioned like that.
Yeah, but that would go against all the reporting. All the reporting says it's the Steelers, Giants, or Vikings.
I don't know if I wouldn't want the job if I was Aaron Rodgers, but I think it's going to be Levis again. I really think that they should ride it out and stink and build the team up to where next year you get Arch Manning or whatever, which I think would be very popular in Nashville, by the way, but because of the whole Peyton Manning connection with Tennessee. But anyways, you get Arch Manning, Cade Klubnik, Avery Johnson, Drowell, or whatever it is. If you don't like a core, if you have any questions about the quarterback stuff, just ride it out. And I feel like Borgonzi should be. I understand you want to win now, but if you think that you have to really, you can't listen to the outside noise of, well, they stink again, they should get rid of the coach or whatever history says. If you think Callahan is the right head coach, then you got to deal with whatever happens this year and ride it out one more time, because until they take a quarterback, he's never really getting a fair shot anyways.
All right, coming up next, we'll get back to college basketball. We'll get a national perspective on Kansas and Missouri's chance in the Big 12 tournament, SEC tournament. Plus, is it really just about Auburn and Duke at this point in time? John Martin from the Field of 68 stops by next. Just getting started here on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get back into the NFL here in about 12 minutes or so. Latest on the Steelers situation, we talked about Mason Rudolph signing there, but where could Aaron Rodgers end up? There's some other speculation about a destination that to me just wouldn't make any sense in regards to his future. That's coming up in a bit, but let's keep talking some college basketball. Big 12 tournament tips off again today in about an hour from now with Iowa State in action, taking on BYU. Then later on tonight, the Kansas Jayhawks will take on the Arizona Wildcats. And then also this evening, Missouri Tigers in the SEC tournament, taking on Mississippi State. So a lot to get into. And we welcome in John Martin, analyst for the Field of 68. He's a sports talk host on ESPN 92.9 in Memphis. John, good to have you on the show, man. I wanted to just get your perspective, starting with the locals for a second. We can talk broader about college basketball. But when you look at Missouri, for example, tonight in the SEC tournament, what chance do you give them to possibly go on a run the way they're playing right now, where seemingly that defense has just become a big problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is, and I appreciate you guys having me on, the first thing is obviously great job, and a credit to Dennis Gates for turning this thing around. I mean, it looked really, really bad a year ago. You didn't win a single game in the SEC. So the arrow was definitely pointing down, but you know, sometimes in the transfer portal era, man, you just have a bad crop, you know. You just get a bad mix of players, you know, or even one bad apple can ruin the bunch. And it's hard to kind of know that, you know, before the season starts, right? Until guys get in practice and get into game situations, like, you don't know. But that's, you know, that's the new world that you have to navigate. And I think Dennis has definitely done a good job of identifying, you know, a new crop, brings in Mark Mitchell, who has been unbelievable. I mean, I think beyond anybody's wildest dreams how good he's been. Obviously, I think about that Alabama game where, I mean, that was as good a game as anybody's played in college basketball this year. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, though, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for them to make a run in this SEC tournament, you know, just because their draw. I mean, they gotta obviously beat a Mississippi State team that has slid down the stretch, but did win resoundingly last night. But if you win tonight, then you're rewarded with a game against, you know, Florida, a potential one seed. So, and I don't really think anybody's beating them in this tournament. So I think that's the hesitation I have with Missouri. They're just kind of running into it with their draw this week.
If they were to go, let's say, on it, is it just like Mark Mitchell's got to have those kind of games multiple times in a row? Or do you think there's someone further down they can rely on? And look, they're a pretty even scoring team across the board. Mm-hmm. But, like, is it Mark Mitchell's just got to go on one of those, like, guard-type runs in an SEC tournament?
Yeah, I mean, you have that. I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys saw Caleb Grill in that Alabama game was just kind of throwing it into the ocean. Like, it didn't really matter where he was on the floor. It didn't matter. I don't even think he was looking at the rim in the second half. Like, it was just everything he put up was going in. So it could be something like that. I mean, it could be Caleb Grill just having a week, obviously, in Nashville. That is certainly possible, especially with somebody that can shoot the ball as well as he can. So, you know, I think just the thing with Missouri that they've got to show is that they can do it, you know, outside of Columbia. You know, they've been elite there. They've been elite all season long in Columbia. You know, can you do it, you know, for multiple games outside? I think that's going to be the question this week, and it's going to be the question, obviously, in the NCAA tournament.
What about the Kansas Jayhawks? You know, this is a team that was preseason number one all the way back. And I've told you, the guys here locally know as well, like, just I can't stand preseason rankings and in AP polls anyway. But obviously way off when it came to Kansas. Last night's game, great entertaining contest, goes to overtime against UCF. But that was a perfect encapsulation, I think, at times of what this Kansas team has been. Unable to finish out games and having to go to overtime against an NIT team. And there were some positives in there with AJ Storr for the first time all year. But what do you give them in terms of tonight's chances against an Arizona team they beat a week ago?
Yeah, not much of one. I don't like this Kansas team at all. I think they're extremely limited. I don't, you know, listen, like, I get it. They were preseason number one. People were wrong. We were wrong about them. That's the bottom line. And like, I've seen people like put on social media, like, man, now is the time to buy low on Kansas. And I'm just like, for what? Like, for why? I'm just wasting money, you know? I mean, where's the efficiency in 2025? I don't want to buy this team at all. I don't want to buy them at any price. I just think they're bad. I don't know why that is. Like, maybe it's because you have multiple 25-year-olds who are still playing college basketball. They're not in the NBA. Did anybody ever consider that there might be a reason for that? I think that's kind of what you're dealing with Kansas. You know, Bill Self brought a couple guys in the portal. You know, Zeke Mayo's been pretty good. Rylan Griffin's been inconsistent. AJ Storr is basically, like, not rolled over once, except, like you mentioned, for last night. So I think that probably looms large. They're just not a deep team. They're not a deep team. And, you know, their upside to me is extremely limited. So even if they win tonight, which I don't think they will, you know, this team isn't going anywhere. I mean, they're going to be home. They're going to be in Cancun after the first weekend. I have no doubt about it.
From a broader perspective, do you buy into the, like, well, this is just Bill Self, like some of the other guys who just got the hell out of the sport, not adjusting to NIL now a couple of years into it? Obviously he won it like year one or two of NIL, but as things have gone on, just a, like you mentioned earlier, bad crop of recruits that just went south kind of in a hurry. Cause like, this is the weirdest thing about this is it's a Bill Self team in which the guards have gotten worse. That historically has not been the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you kind of have seen this a couple of different places, like UConn, for example. They didn't really do a ton in the portal after winning the title last year because they thought, like, hey, we've got a couple of guys that, you know, didn't play as much, but now we think they're going to take steps because they're going to get reps. And that hasn't really happened. I think, you know, doubling down on guys that you've had in your program, you know, just hoping that they take steps. I don't know if that's totally the case. I think it kind of is with KJ Adams. Like, he has this weird fetish with KJ Adams that he just can't quit. I think KJ Adams is a decent player. I don't think he's better than Badunga, though, for example. And for whatever reason, he's just been insistent on KJ Adams, man. So I don't know if it's necessarily like, you know, the new wave as much as it has kind of been Bill's stubbornness about this core. You know, I'm in Memphis, and one of the things that Penny had to have happen to be successful is all his kids that he coached in high school at East, they had to graduate for him to really take off. He brought them to Memphis, and they were just limited, and he couldn't see, right? He couldn't see through the emotional attachment to the players that they weren't good enough. And I think for Bill, what he needs to get through is the Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adams era because it's holding them back.
We're talking to John Martin, analyst for the Field of 68. He also is a sports talk host in Memphis for ESPN 92.9. All right, Auburn, Duke, clearly the two best teams in the country. Can we still say that? Is it them in the field? Where do you stand with those two teams? In Florida, I guess, is now a team we have to consider being in that same group or no?
Yeah, I mean, we do this every year, but I mean, I think the four ones right now are as strong as we've seen in a long time. I mean, I don't really know what the weakness is for any of them. You know, I know Houston will have this perception of, well, they can't shoot, but like this is Kelvin's best offensive team ever. They're awesome. And guess what? They're still number two defensively. So it hasn't come at the expense of that. You know, Florida is kind of the same way. Like Florida can make a shot from anywhere on the floor with Walter Clayton. They have three different bigs they can throw at you that are awesome. Four sometimes, right? Now if they're all healthy. And then, yeah, I mean, Auburn is the only thing that worries me about Auburn. I actually might think Auburn is the most vulnerable, most susceptible here because their emotional intelligence lacks quite a bit. I mean, we see that with Chad Baker Mazzara, like, and they are, you know, a team that, you know, I just feel like can run into a situation where if it's a chippy game, somebody gets ejected or, you know, commits a flagrant two or something along those lines. Like, I just question that, you know. That's, I don't question that with Duke. I don't question that with Florida, and I don't question that with Houston. So of the four, I think weirdly, even though metrically maybe they've rated the best throughout the year, Auburn seems like the one that's most likely to maybe get picked off here.
You had mentioned UConn earlier, so I'm just curious. Since they're the back-to-back national champion, should anyone fear them? I think the most recent seed line is like 8-9. Do you kind of hate getting them if you're a one seed, or is it just like, it's not a good UConn team, we're fine?
Yeah, I think, you know, you'd fear them if they had Donovan Klingon and Stephon Castle and Tristan Newton, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think you fear Hassan Diarra and Samson Johnson and, you know, the inconsistent Alex Caravan. I don't think you fear that. I mean, obviously, look, they're live because Dan Hurley's a great coach, and, like, he's going to scheme his way into being competitive. But, I mean, he doesn't have the horses this year. So, no, I think you look at it like, yeah, UConn's an eight, and they earned that. They earned the eight, you know, this year with the way they played. So I don't think they're striking fear into the one seeds this season by any stretch of the imagination.
John Martin, analyst for the Field of 68. Appreciate the time, man. I know you got a show to do, so thanks for hopping on.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Appreciate any time.
There you go. John Martin, good stuff from him talking about the college basketball slate today a little bit with Kansas and Missouri, and ultimately looking ahead a little bit to next week and, of course, Selection Sunday, just a couple days away, and what teams are going to be the popular picks already. And everybody has heard about Auburn and Duke all year, but maybe Florida and Houston are some other teams to keep an eye on.
See how the Big 12 and SEC tournaments go for them. Of course, our Big 12 tournament coverage on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Twin Peaks Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views. He does not like your Jayhawks. He said they stink.
Well, they have for much of the year.
Stink.
They have for much of the year.
They have not been a good basketball team. They didn't look good last night. I walked out of that game the same way as we mentioned the Kansas State game the night before, where I'm like, I mean, cool, you didn't lose to the inferior opponent, but I didn't like what I saw.
Defensively,
or anything,
no. Offensively, you know? Defensively was pitiful. Again, perimeter defense been a problem for them all year, and they're going to have to play a hell of a lot better against Arizona. I understand they beat them last Saturday on that senior day. It was at Allen Fieldhouse. I don't think it's this. Oh my gosh, there's no way he sounded like he's like giving them 0% chance to win tonight. I think
0% chance to get out of the first weekend in the NCAA.
Well, that's probably a fair. I'm saying to say they have a 0% chance to win tonight. I disagree with that. Right now they're a 1.5 point underdog. If I had to throw money on it, if I was forced to, I would probably take Arizona. But I don't think it's like this. Oh my gosh, it's just, you know, David versus Goliath kind of thing going on.
No,
tonight,
I think I view it like the Kansas State game last night. I give Kansas a 40-45%. It's a 50-50 game, but not the 50 in their favor, right? I got to give enough percentage points to be like 55-45.
Yeah, it's a higher level matchup in general, right? It's Kansas and Arizona versus Baylor, who now probably has solidified a tournament spot. Baylor would have lost to K-State, Baylor might have been out of the NCAA tournament. Like, there was a chance of that.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I just the thing that I keep coming back to is the weight. And I know that, you know, John, I think, is spot on in the fact that the one seeds collectively are, it's a better field of talent at the top than we've had in recent years. But it's March, man. I just think there's always
crazy
something where
stuff, man.
You just survive an event where, look, if KU ends up being a 6 seed and they beat VCU or whoever is the 11 seed and they win by 1 point, it doesn't matter because they won by 1 point. They could go on to beat the 3 sure. after that or whatever sure. the case is. If they're a 6 seed, I think that they could get out of the first weekend. If they're a 5, I think they definitely could. It all depends on where they're seated at. Because if they're a 7, they have to face a 2. The top of the cream of the crop in terms of seeding is so good where they'd have a hard time getting out of it. But it just depends on where you
game
sit.
Game tonight's
at.
Big on that swing where you're talking about definitely. Between the 6.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll get the latest on Bobby Wood Jr.'s scare yesterday. Hit by pitch in the forearm. He sent out some tweets. Appears to be fine. Fesco had an update on it today. We're expected to hear from Matt Quatrero a little bit later on in the show as well. One more update and where things stand with him. So we'll get to that in about 15 minutes or so. But we mentioned Mason Rudolph had signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers on a small 2-year, $8 million deal, most likely to be a backup. But we're obviously joking a little bit because right now he is the only quarterback under contract in Pittsburgh because Correct. They're waiting on Aaron Rodgers. The latest thing there is that he might have interest in going to the Minnesota Vikings, and you and I were both trying to figure out
why?
Other than just trying to go right down the Brett Favre path, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what is he, like one illicit photo and a welfare scam away from completing the full Brett Favre career?
I mean, pretty close.
I mean, if he goes to Minnesota, those are the only two things he's short: to send a text message he shouldn't to some staff members, and then to commit welfare fraud in the state of Mississippi, and then he'll be good to go on the full Brett Favre arc. It's not even about that. It's not about, like, being with the same three teams, landing in the same three areas. I understand why Aaron Rodgers would find Minnesota appealing. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. I think Kevin O'Connell is one of the better coaches in the league. There's a reason why that should be attractive. Minnesota, don't do this. Don't do this. You got all this momentum. You're well coached. You're winning games two of the last 3 years under Kevin O'Connell. You got a legitimate coach of the year candidate most years. You drafted a first-round quarterback. I know he's hurt. I know that comes with some risk. I know you'd like a veteran backup you could trust. This is not that case, though. If they sign Aaron Rodgers, it's to let him start while they let J.J. McCarthy sit another 2 years. And as much as Jordan Love is a good NFL quarterback...
Oh, I don't know about 2 years.
At least a year.
Yeah.
But the problem is like you sign a veteran quarterback and you stall this thing. Jordan Love's a good quarterback, but you got no advantage of the rookie quarterback on the rookie deal because of how long you took to get him in the lineup. You wait 2 full years on J.J. McCarthy? His injury should get him back by near the beginning of the year. I think you roll with the guy you drafted. Unless you think he just stinks. And even then, yeah. I wouldn't do Aaron Rodgers because it's too messy.
Well, they walked on Darnold, so they obviously don't think J.J. McCarthy stinks. I think the question is just where is his overall development at this point in time? Are they confident he can step right in week one? What I don't get, other than Aaron Rodgers playing the attention game, which we know, say what you will about him, anything else, like, we can all, I think, agree. He loves attention. That's who he is. That's just been established. Why is he not running to sign with the Steelers?
You are at the
end of your career. Very few teams are interested.
They're
you can walk
franchise.
In, have nobody in, threatening to take your job. You would be the starting quarterback. You have some weapons there. You have a really good head coach, a team that's been in the playoffs. They're hoping you can take them past that, obviously, but they're a playoff team every year with Mike Tomlin, right? Like, I don't get why you're not running to take the Steelers job if you're
because
Aaron Rodgers.
But Vikings you want the offense is better, but tough.
Yeah, but I think ultimately he likes the attention, and he likes being in the spot that he's in right now, and that everybody is talking about him. And you got some weird photos of him walking on the beach with a blanket wrapped around him yesterday that People magazine or somebody put out there. He likes this.
I don't know. I wonder if he. You got to think that he has some sort of inclination that the Vikings would have him in as a starter. He's almost just waiting on that job. It sounds like if you were to rank the jobs, I think Minnesota is the better one. Obviously,
other than the fact there's somebody waiting right behind you to snipe your job away.
Yeah, but isn't that's if he went to Pittsburgh, it was always going to be that way likely anyways, where he plays maybe 2 seasons, where it's his
career. He's going to retire. But we're saying, like, in this upcoming year in Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph's not taking the job from Aaron Rodgers.
No, but if Aaron Rodgers has a bad month, he's done. And J.J. McCarthy is the starter.
It depends on what the Vikings promise. I mean, yeah, I guess so. It just depends on what the Vikings decide to do. But I don't – to me, and I don't know if this is just where I have – I like Aaron Rodgers maybe more than most people, but I don't think that – I don't think he would have a bad season with the team is too good for him to play poorly. I just think that
I think he's bad
with the Jets. He just wasn't what Aaron Rodgers normally is.
He's an average quarterback now. He's an average quarterback.
But the Pittsburgh one is legitimately, out of any of the available options in the entire NFL, it's like the only semi-decent fit anymore for Aaron Rodgers. Like, it's the only one that kind of makes sense. A head coach who won't let you run the show, a GM who won't let you run the show. You have wide receivers right now in Pickens and Metcalf. Yeah, they got to rework the offensive line a little bit. They're a playoff team every year. They're a winning team every year. Like, you're not having to reset or refix a Jets franchise that's been broken forever. Like, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, borderline dream scenario is being offered that Pittsburgh Steelers job. I'm with Gold. I can't believe you wouldn't want it. Yeah, the weapons are better in Minnesota, but again, you could lose your job there. And you're not even guaranteed that job. They might not sign you. They might not be interested. It's like there's a, I don't know. I don't even know what the apt comparison is for real life, but I mean, that job is there. Be like, Gold's turning down 9s at the bar because the 10 he thinks might still be interested.
That actually is a really good comparison.
What are you doing, dude? She's a 9. Just take the date.
Except in this case, The Steelers, for all the talk about them being held hostage, the Steelers, there's nobody else I still don't believe that ultimately, like, that they would pivot to, right? So, like, the talk of, well, the Steelers, you know, man, they got to wait for Rodgers to make his decision. They're going to be caught with their pants down, as Cody would say yesterday. And you don't want to be that. And they're going to have no quarterback. I just don't, like, it's Aaron Rodgers or bust at this time at this point anyway, right? Like, they're not. Russell Wilson has taken visits to Cleveland and he's taken visits to the Giants reportedly. There's no other team. Like, maybe you guys buy the Viking report, but in my mind, there's no other team competing for Rodgers anymore. So it's basically like Aaron Rodgers to me is picking you or nobody. I know we just said there's a report that he likes maybe the Vikings. I just don't
he
buy
likes,
that.
But
I just
the don't report's know. Not the Vikings like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Never, ever, ever get caught with your pants down. That was Brett Favre. That's the next path. You know, like, again, if he continues this,
Jen Sturger text, right?
Mm-hmm. I am a little bit surprised that the Steelers signed Mason Rudolph only because I mean, that maybe that shows you that they're not confident that they're going to get Aaron in the first place and they need some sort of a plan because they're too high to draft a quarterback. You know, Jackson Dart might be off the board by the time we get to Pittsburgh.
Depending on what teams want to do. Aaron Rodgers is not a long-term solution anyway. He could play great this year. He's not playing 4 years from now in the NFL. So, I mean, this is a 1- and 2-year thing as far as I'm concerned with Pittsburgh anyway. This is just, once again, you know, you're hoping that somehow Rodgers can elevate you from being a wild card 1-and-done to getting you to an AFC title game or something.
Might be a Carson Wentz-Mason Rudolph quarterback battle there in Pittsburgh if Aaron Rodgers doesn't go there.
Ugh.
I'm not kidding. That's a sign serious
AFC,
thing.
Sign the rest of the AFC North up for that, please.
Yeah, my guess is what Drew
and
is saying.
And they'll still go 9-8.
I know.
Tom will give him a 9. Tom will give him a 9 wins.
He always finds a way, man. He just always finds a way. It doesn't make any sense, but.
So if the Browns, let's say the Browns sign Russell Wilson, they're not drafting a quarterback then, correct?
No, they should. Their fans don't even want Russell
Wilson. Well, they would have Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, and Kenny Pickett would be the quarterback room if that happened.
I know, but there's no way that they draft a guy and with their second overall pick. If they sign Russell Wilson, I don't think they, unless they're the mess of an organization that we think that they are.
Well, they are.
Or but also, we know that they are. If you're picking number two and your current quarterback is a sexual assaulter who's been hurt for the entire year and is now an accused sexual assaulter, maybe. I don't know. He said settled
forget
cases.
That part. He stinks.
Yeah, just look at the football for a second. He's not a good quarterback.
He can't get on the field, and he's a $90 million cap hit. I'd be looking at quarterback. I can't believe some of these teams at the top of the draft, like, kick around the idea and be like, I think maybe we just take, like, Abdul Carter. You're like, no. You can't play quarterback. You could have all the great. You could have Myles Garrett and Abdul Carter wrecking things for people next. If you're starting Kenny Pickett, there is no amount of. If you're starting Russell Wilson, there's no amount of saving your team.
It goes back to every year when there's maybe perceived to be a weaker QB draft class. Like, if you don't like the quarterback, though, don't draft the quarterback. You know, I know it sounds so simple. Like, it doesn't matter if you got to take him. I get the in a simple world, yes. But I mean, ultimately, if you're Cleveland or any team. Let's take Cleveland out because their decision-making process has obviously not been good for decades.
And they can't evaluate a quarterback. So maybe if you don't like him, that tells you something. You should like him.
Right, but if your team, so that's why I say you got to take Cleveland's history. Yeah. Like, I'm talking about any team because this conversation comes up every single year where it's like, you have to take the quarterback. If you don't love the quarterback, though, I'm not saying you're right by not, but like if you don't love the quarterback, you shouldn't draft the quarterback because once you draft him, you are saying you're at least with that guy for 2 or 3 years if you're that team. And if you didn't like him, then you're stuck. And that GM, obviously, you know, is tied to that quarterback, etc. If you're picking number two in this year's class, like I think Shutter Sanders is actually going to end up being better than Cam Ward. So, like, if I was Cleveland, yes, I would do what you're saying. But I don't think it's this unique thing to Cleveland where a team may not fall in love with a quarterback, and you shouldn't draft the quarterback if you don't actually believe in them. That would be silly too.
I guess yes, but like if you're even on the fence. Quarterback evaluation, teams will admit this. Quarterback evaluation is incredibly fickle, and teams are wrong all the time, and it's very, very, very difficult position. So if you're like, I don't know if I really like Cam, we're tough. You're picking two and you have no quarterback. I do think in that scenario, bite the bullet and take the risk.
You're saying
because that's still better than the alternative, which is I'm going to pit Russell Wilson and Kenny Pickett against each other because I know that stinks. If you're not sure on Cam Ward, I'd rather just not be sure or not like Cam Ward than start Russell Wilson and Kenny Pickett.
So you're on the side of you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, so you might as well take the shot at said quarterback.
I'm just saying the other shot already missed. Like, you can either put up the air ball three with Russell Wilson and Kenny Pickett, or you can at least put up a three, and I'm not sure it's an air ball. You might draw some iron. Shot could go in. The other one already missed. You sent it Michael Scott through the end of the gymnasium. It can't hit. Like, I mean, you know, like, that's it for me. It's just like, it has no chance of being a make versus at least the other side you can.
Yeah, I get. Look, we've had this discussion. I think in years past. Like, I think if it was up to you, a lot of these teams, you would just draft three quarterbacks every year and just hope one hits.
If I were one of the bad teams, like, I might take two. I might do like three is crazy, but I might do the Washington way and take RG3 and then Kirk.
Yeah. And like I get that for the most part. We just know that's not how the league operates. And for the sake of a lot of these GMs' jobs and the timeline that they have, like if I'm the general manager of a team and I don't like the quarterback that's there at number two, I'm not taking it just because I can say, well, maybe it works out. That's just not how, I don't think that's how these GMs think, because the minute that GM usually is only getting one quarterback to draft. So if I'm the GM of Cleveland, I think it's Barry or whatever, Andrew Barry. If I draft the quarterback at two and I know I in my mind, I think he sucks and I draft him, I don't like him. And he does, in fact, suck. I can't go to the, well, you know, guys, you guys told me to draft quarterbacks every, I didn't really like him anyway. No, you're fired. Your ass is out of town anyway. So I understand you got to, ultimately, they have failed miserably.
I think you're getting fired if you start Kenny Pickett. So, like, I just think you're getting fired either
obviously
way.
Not, because he, chance, obviously not. I mean, they've given him the security. I mean, like,
he's untouchable.
He did the Deshaun Watson contract. He still got a job today, you know?
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. That's your own doing.
Up next, guys, let's get back to some baseball. The latest update from Fesco this morning on Bobby Witt Jr. We're also expected to hear from Matt Quatrero. A close call, it looks like. Things are going to probably be working out for Bobby Witt Jr. long term. And we'll talk more about the Missouri Tigers, who have an SEC tournament game tonight.